Hello and welcome. I'm Liz Booker, literary aviatrix, continuing my conversation with author Nell McShane Wolfhart, talking about her book, The Great Stewardess Rebellion, which is a nonfiction narrative history of that period of time when the flight attendants went in search of their rights as women. It was a great book. We discussed it in September of 2023 for the Aviatrix Book Club. And now we're going to talk about Nell and her writing. To come again, to wait for you to find a pen and fill the paper with the message. So Nell, you mentioned a little bit about how you came to this book and in your writing career, but how'd you get started in writing and how'd you hone your craft?
I was a freelance travel writer for many years, maybe like 15 years. And I started on that because I was living in Vietnam. I've lived in a lot of different places just for fun, honestly, just because it was a nice place to live. So I was in Vietnam for maybe 4 or 5 years. And I've always, writing is something that always came easy to me and I enjoyed doing it. I'm a voracious reader and I also love travel. And so it was kind of a natural fit. I realized that there were not that many English language journalists in Vietnam at that time. So I could pitch travel stories about things to do in Vietnam, you know, where to go in Ho Chi Minh City or like what islands to visit. And there wasn't a lot of competition. There weren't other people writing those stories. So it was a great way for me to sort of like get in the door at a lot of different publications with just that particular niche. And turned out I was good at it and I ended up doing a lot of it. And then I developed a whole career doing travel writing for many years. I was freelance, but that was my full-time job. And I really enjoyed it. And I ended up stopping it pretty much just before the pandemic, which was serendipitous, I guess, because I began writing this book.
Yeah, that turns out to be pretty good timing for you. Good, congratulations.
Thank you. It was accidental, but it turned out, yes, I was very lucky, I have to say.
And so how did you make the transition from writing the short form, you know, as a journalist to writing a full length book?
I tried to look at it more of like a series of short articles in the beginning. And then eventually I was like, oh, okay, no, like there's an arc here. There's a full story. It's going from beginning to end. I have to do callbacks. But it was a little difficult to make that transition just to go from short form to long form. I think it requires a kind of a mental switch that flips on when you're not like pitching all the time and hustling all the time. Like as any freelancer out there knows, most of your job is hustling for the work. Only about 10% of your job is actually doing the job. And that's especially true when it comes to journalism as a freelancer and travel writing in particular, because there are a lot of people doing it and fewer places to put those articles every day. So it was lovely to have the break from selling and coming up with ideas. And it was nice to be able to finally go to restaurants or take trips and not have to like be constantly writing an article in my head. So I like that part.
Yeah. 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 Okay. And so tell me how the publication, do you have an agent? How did you get this from idea to published?
I have an agent. I have a wonderful agent whom I adore. It was basically everything in my life has basically been built on something else. But also I think that the main reason that I have managed to be a freelance travel writer and write for all these prestigious travel publications or publish a book with a big five publisher is because I just ask for the things that I want. And if there was any advice I was going to give to any aspiring writers out there, it would be like, just ask. So I had a contact it goes back. So I was doing freelance travel writing. Then I had an idea for a column for the New York Times travel section. So I just pitched it to them. Like, why not? The worst they can do is say no. So they said yes. Then I got the idea for the book from somebody there. Then I like had a PR contact who contacted me through the column. And I said, oh, do you know any agents? I have a book idea. She put me in touch with an agent. It put me in touch with another agent. That was how I got my agent. And then I had a few other different ideas that went nowhere. And then this idea about stewardesses and the 1960s and feminism and labor. This was like the one that we were both like, yes, like this is the book that I want to write. And then we went through the sort of regular rigmarole, which is writing the proposal, doing all the research, you know, all the outlining. I took, I'm sure, like a full 6 months worth of work on my part and a lot of heavy lifting on her part. And then she sent it out and then we got the deal. So,
yeah. So can we go into like maybe a little closer detail on the proposal? So at what point did you write the proposal? as it relates to the actual writing of the book? And when did that, what does that timeline look like in terms of pulling the whole story together, outlining it, or sending the proposal out? Like, how'd that work for you?
That's a great question. I think that after my agent and I had discussed the idea and I'd sort of nosed around a little more and we agreed, okay, this is it. So the proposal was maybe 50 pages long. It's like you put in some stuff about how you might market it, about your contacts, about your experience. You write a summary of what the book is going to be, and then you do a chapter outline. So you write like what's going to happen in each chapter. You go down the whole thing. You pick comps. You pick, books that are similar to your book that have sold well, to put them in there to try and create the idea that your book will also sell well. And I think that whole process took about 6 months. And a lot of that was research and interviews with people because I needed to talk to the people who were going to be in the book. And I needed to do the research about the time period to actually pull together the bones of the story. So it is extremely tedious to do this work because you don't know that you're ever going to get paid for it or that you're ever going to get to write the book about it. But if you do manage to sell the book, like you already have the outline, you already know where you're going with it. Like you already have the research, contact, like it does make that part a lot easier, but it can take, I think, a lot of willpower and stamina to make yourself keep going on a project that you're like, you just have no idea if anyone is going to be interested in it. Like that's really hard. And that's where having a helpful agent like mine, who is, helps you really craft a proposal and fine tune everything can really keep you going. So I think that took about 6 months and then she sent it out to a bunch of editors. I think about 20 editors, maybe about half of those were sort of interested. Six of them wanted this set of calls with me in which, then you discuss the book and they ask questions about where it's going to go. And then my agent held an auction, which means that those publishers, they submit a bid. They don't know what anyone else is bidding. Nice. They submit a bid on the book as to how much they're willing to pay, the advance, how much they're willing to pay you to write the book. Yeah. And it was a huge range, really big range. So then she did a second round of the auction that was just the top three offers. And then we picked one of those. So that's sort of,
I'm interested to know, was your decision about who to publish with purely driven by the advance that you were going to get, or did you take into account other factors that weighed in on your decision?
It turned out the top two offers were fairly close together, and I ended up going with the one that was slightly lower on the advice of, I asked my agent, and she pointed out that the editor that I ended up going with, Chris Popolo at Doubleday, she was really established. She'd worked on a bunch of Pulitzer Prize winning books. She was a really, a solid choice who had she had a great background. And I was like, okay, even if it's a little bit less money, that sounds great. I really knew I could rely on her to be around for the whole period of the book. She wasn't somebody who was going to suddenly move to a new publishing house or something like that. She's really established. And I'm so glad I did. I had such a wonderful time working with her and she was a great editor. So yeah. And the whole process of sending it out took a couple of weeks and then the auction, that part all happened within a few months. I think we had the deal within a couple of months. So that part actually went much faster than writing the proposal. I'll just put it back in there.
And so now it's sold and now you were working on actually writing the book in between that, just while you were waiting for
No. I was pretty much under the covers hoping that somebody would buy it.
But once you got that deal, then it's back to work. Then and finishing it. So how did that relationship feel between how much did the book change from your original proposal to the published version that we see today?
A fair amount, actually. I was just talking about how the outline is really helpful as a guide when you're actually writing it. And it definitely is. But just the more research you do, the more people you talk to, the more stories come to light. Sometimes different arcs appear, different things come up and you make, tweaks as you go along. So I would say it's in the essence, it's similar, but there are a lot of changes that I made along the way that I thought made it more interesting and more dramatic. Some of the best advice I got was to write it like a movie, you're watching a movie, not like you're writing some kind of boring research heavy, academic book, but what are the people doing? What's happening in the room? What are they wearing? What are they how are they moving? How are they interacting with each other? And I thought that was really excellent advice for anyone who's looking to do anything nonfiction wise, just to make it, more fun to read, I guess.
Yeah. So in doing the research, how did you establish a rapport with the sort of main characters that you talk about in the book?
Oh, God bless them and their patience. I mean, they did so many phone calls with me. I ended up going to visit them all in person and doing like a lot of in-person interviews. That was so much fun after having spent, you know, months on the phone. They were just so accommodating and so nice. And I don't think that everyone would have been like that. I just happened to get really lucky that the people I most wanted to write about and who had the most interesting stories and who had sort of like directed the events that happened in the book were also willing to share the story with me. So I had to do a little bit of persuading. They're not really like self-promoters. But I think they recognize that this is a story that other people should know about, you know, that this is like a really relevant part of women's history, of labor history, of, I don't know, industry history, American history. And they were like excited that somebody was going to tell that story and that other people were going to learn about it. So that definitely helped.
That's great. Yeah. And so how much do you think, if you could weigh like how much of your research was through these, you know, direct interviews and how much was, you know, in the archives looking at old airline ads?
Yes, cannot get enough of those airline ads. Maybe 50-50. It was okay. A lot of both, like many, many, many hours of interviews with lots of different people, not all of which made it into the book. But then also, yeah, many, many hours of reading old articles, reading old books, going to, you know, archives in Texas and digging around. I'd say maybe 50-50. A lot of both for sure.
Yeah. So, I think, you know, you talk about uncovering an exciting story that needs to be told that hasn't been told as fully as it should have been yet. So that's one element that's really fun for you to have stumbled on something that also interests you, but also that the players are still alive, that you were able to talk to them. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yes. Super lucky. Very lucky. It was,
we have a lot of stories lingering in our history, of women in aviation, but many, if not most of those people are no longer with us. So it's just a different kind of research, I think, to try and tell those stories. So you're fortunate to have the firsthand. Yeah.
I was very lucky. And I was glad I did it when I did, for sure.
Yeah. Okay. And so now you have a published book. That's so exciting. So you have a book baby, and like the day after that happened, then what?
After the book published?
Yeah.
I had a wonderful team at Doubleday who just did a really great job of like getting me onto podcasts and radio and interviews. The book was on the cover of the New York Times book review. Like amazingly, like just, I don't know how.
Fabulous.
Yes, and it got well reviewed. Got reviewed in tons of places, and that is like all thanks to the people at Doubleday who were working on it. And I was so grateful for that. I will say for the aspiring writers out there that like reviews do not really translate to sales. That this is something that I think like the publishing, like it's great because then you get a lot of like blurbs for the back of the book and quotes from, you know, from different places, and you know, Wall Street Journal says this.
Gloria Steinem.
Yeah, Gloria Steinem, or like, you know, but. Even just from like from the reviews, and those are great to put on the book, but like most, I guess what it comes down to is like a lot of people read reviews, but not all those people buy books. Writing the book, like I was never thinking like, oh, okay, this is my like, you know, golden ticket or whatever. I got a generous advance, which was more than enough for me. And I was thrilled with that. And my agent wisely said at the beginning, she said like, don't expect to get more than like the advance. Don't expect to get royalties on this. Like, this is probably all the money you're going to make from the book. And I thought that was really good advice. And so far it has been true. But just in general, you know, people put a lot of emphasis on reviews and things like that. And I got all of those things. But the book did not like hit the bestseller list. You know, those things are just not that connected.
Yeah. Well, that's unfortunate. I mean, it's such a well done book, and it seems to have, I mean, from my perspective, it would have popular appeal, you know, just a period of our history. So, well, we'll do what we can to get more people to buy it in our community.
I mean, honestly, for me, it's like, I want people to read it. Of course, I want people to read it. But it'd be nice, of course, it'd be nice to sell like lots of copies of the book. I guess that would be life-changing if it didn't hit the bestseller list. But like just the process of writing it, and that the privilege of having an advance that allowed me to take a year and write it, like that was a gift that most people don't get. So honestly, that was kind of good enough. Yeah.
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 Good for you. That's wonderful. And so what do you do now? Like, what are you out there still marketing it and promoting it, or you just kind of moved on?
Yeah. Occasionally I do some, I don't do a lot of outreach on my own. But there are sometimes people reach out for podcasts or for interviews or, you know, things like this, which is always fun. Yeah. Book clubs. I love doing book clubs. All those things, always like a privilege to get to do those. And I really enjoy it, but no, I'm kind of looking at other projects now, and different things that I'm working on. I don't spend a lot of time, promoting the book now.
Okay. Well, I want to personally invite you to come to the Women in Aviation International Conference sometime. I think that, you know, what they do for you is you just have to get yourself there, and you could even maybe do an education session if they were interested in the history of this stuff. I think that that might be neat. But otherwise, they give you a table at WAI for a couple of hours to do book signings, and I kind of run that table. So, if you would come,
I would love to do that. I bet I would meet so many interesting women. Fun.
Yeah, and it's Women in Aviation International is an organization that promotes women throughout the aviation industry, not just by, like, there are a lot of groups that are just pilots, like the 99s is the Women Pilots Association, right? But their WAI is about all of the whole industry, and men are welcome too. And so I think it's just a really great place for you to consider bringing your book, and I'll give you more details about that. Okay.
I would love to hear more about that. That just sounds like, I mean, book aside, that just sounds like really fun.
It is. It's super fun. It's super fun. Okay. So, we kind of talked about your advice for writers. Is there anything else that you wanted to share? Like, any words of wisdom in terms of writing, researching, or anything that we haven't talked about?
I think I would mainly just reiterate the thing I said earlier about just asking for the thing that you want. I know there's a lot of people out there who want to write books or even articles or memoirs, anything about their own experience. And they hold back and they hold back and they hold back because they don't want someone to tell them no, or they don't want to feel that rejection. But as somebody who has pitched thousands of ideas over the course of her career, and, you know, 90% of which were rejected, you build up a resistance to it, and eventually somebody says yes. There's an expression I learned in Brazil, which is, you already have the no, you know? So, like, if you have an idea out there, if you're thinking about writing a book, if you have a memoir, if you have something you want to do, like, no one's going to come up to you and be like, oh, have you been working on a book? I'd love to read it. Like, just start getting it out there. Like, you have literally nothing to lose, and there could be so much fun and potential in it. And I don't know. So my advice to pretty much everyone is just, like, less thinking, more doing, and just go for it. That's pretty much it.
That's such great advice and very inspiring. I love it. Yeah. The phrase that I used it a lot as the HR manager for the pilots in the Coast Guard, because, you know, there were special opportunities that you had to apply for and compete for. And we would always say, well, the answer is no, if you don't ask. It's already
exactly.
No.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yes, exactly. Like, there's virtually nothing to lose and everything to gain. And, like, if you want to write your story, like, I promise you, no publisher is going to come up and be like, oh, do you have a story for me? Like, just get it out there. Just get it out there. There's nothing to lose. So yeah, 100%.
I love it. Nell, thank you so much. Thanks for the inspiring story that you told in the book, and for sharing your inspiring story as a writer. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Liz. I really enjoyed this. Again, to wait for you to find a pen and fill the paper with the message that it wants.